Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Podcast for Fantasy Team Advice. This is episode number 7. I am filling in for Joe DiRienzo and Jamie Calandro, both of whom could not be here, so you get the third stringer, KJ. I am the founder of Fantasy Team Advice, and this week I will be joined by Seth Klein, writer from Razzball.com. You can find Seth at Seth the Sportsman on Twitter. Seth, how you doing?
I'm doing well, KJ. How's your morning turning out so far?
It's actually beautiful out here in Colorado right now. We're expected to get some more snow tonight, but it's nothing compared to what everybody on the East Coast has been seeing. So hopefully they're all staying warm out there. And, you know, pitchers and catchers have reported spring training is getting underway. It's a beautiful time of year.
It is a nice time of year, and I think we're both sort of in between that. You're a little north of spring training, Arizona. I'm a little west, so we can look down onto the Cactus League from both our locations.
Yeah, you got that right. One of these days I'm going to have to head down there and see the spring training complex that the Rockies built.
Yeah, that must be nice.
Well,
I went to a game once years ago.
Yeah, you know, they've built so many different locations down there now. I imagine it's a lot better than when I was there in the late 90s. All right, so turning to the news and notes from around fantasy baseball, being an Angels fan, I want to lead off with what's going on with the Angels, and that would be Josh Hamilton. He suffered a relapse this past week, or I guess previous to that, but it's coming out this past week that he relapsed involving cocaine and alcohol. The suspension is expected to be at least 25 games, not a full season. What do you see the fantasy impact being to the Angels roster?
I don't think it's going to be much different right now than it would have been, because he was already supposed to miss the first month, 6 weeks, with the shoulder injury that he has. Now, I don't know if the 25 games will be tacked on, like, from when he's healthy, meaning, like, they may say once you're off the DL, we have to do this, because it sort of doesn't make sense, or it doesn't seem like a punishment to be suspended 25 games after you've had shoulder surgery. But from a fantasy perspective, I didn't like him at all much this year anyway. I didn't like him much last year. He was terrible in the playoffs. He was terrible in the second half of the season. He's pretty much just been terrible as an Angel. And I don't see at his age that getting better. If he played a full season, I was sort of projecting maybe 18 to 20 home runs in the 260 batting average. So he's not a guy that you're really targeting much in 12-team leagues or less, you know, unless you've got five outfielder spots, maybe a couple utilities, maybe as a bench slot. But for now, he's a guy I'm completely avoiding in fantasy. They are saying at least 25 games. Of course, that could be more. And I speculated yesterday on Twitter that even if he just does get the 25-game suspension, I think there's a good chance that he sort of reevaluates his life a little bit, and maybe he takes some time away from baseball. We know that couldn't hurt right now, whatever he's doing. He had a relapse a couple years ago when he was with the Rangers, when they, I think after they had lost World Series or one of those years, he said he drank a beer in a bar. Ian Kinsler was with him. So he's clearly not got his problems under control. He needs the help, and I think he's a smart guy, and I think that with his family support, he may decide to stay away from the game until he's fully grasped his problems and then come back. So there's really no choice. There's really no reason to take a risk on him at all in fantasy leagues this year.
Yeah, I think all of us are pulling for him. He's obviously proven himself to be a class act. What year was that, 2008 when he was in Yankee Stadium. I know Morneau won the Home Run Derby that year, but he gave me goosebumps with the performance that he put on. He's an amazingly talented player. But you're right, it really has not worked out for him since he came to the Angels. You know, what I'm looking at with him is the trickle-down effect. If he's not out there, I expect Matt Joyce to be seeing most of the playing time. And if Matt Joyce has moved from DH to the outfield, CJ, I think his last name is pronounced Crone, CJ Crone,
yeah,
is going to step in as a full-time DH. And Crone is the guy I'm really interested in from a power-hitting perspective. If Pujols misses time again this year as well, I could see Crone being the 25 home run guy if he can put in a full season.
Yeah, I like Crone a lot, actually. I just picked him up in an NFBC draft as sort of a middle late round guy. I mean, the power's there. He matched in the minors. Problem with him is he really can't play defense very well at all. So I think he's sort of limited to that DH. But you mentioned Matt Joyce. I don't know if Crone will. They need to get Joyce's at bats in there, especially with no Hamilton. I don't see Crone playing probably more than 130, 140 games, just because Joyce can't hit lefties at all, and that's been his thing throughout his career. He can't touch them. He's one of the worst hitters in baseball versus lefties. They won't put him in a lineup versus lefties. So when they want to get Joyce's bat in the lineup versus righties, versus righties, I think that, and they want both of them in the lineup, I think you may see Joyce play a little DH because we know Crone won't be able to play left. Maybe you'll see Colin Cowgill play a little left at that point. But I like the upside for both. I think that Joyce is going to be do well in new surroundings and in a new division, a new team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it happens. Obviously, we need to find out what the exact punishment for Hamilton is going to be. Moving on to Alex Rodriguez in New York, the forgotten man until this spring when suddenly he's on front cover of every tabloid. He's been taking ground balls at first base. Is there any chance this guy is fantasy relevant in 2015?
I'm a Yankees fan, so unfortunately, I'm not a fan of Alex Rodriguez, but I think he has some relevance. It's not going to be in 10 teamers, fringe 12 teamers, but look, the third base position is pretty shallow this year. And I think that, he won't play third base, but he'll qualify there. And I think that he can hit 20, he has 25 home run, potential. Let's put it that way. They'll put his bat in the lineup every game when he has played, other than being suspended. He's proven to be healthy. And to be honest, I don't see any reason why he's not still doing steroids. I mean, at this point, like, why would you not, you know? So I think that he can hit 20 home runs at least, 18 to 20 home runs, maybe 65 RBIs. Again, that's in that Josh Hamilton range if he were playing. So if you need some power at the end of your draft, there are worse flyers to take. But I don't think he's a starting third baseman on your team, maybe a corner infielder if you've been overcome by a lot of injuries.
Yeah, I think especially for anybody who takes a chance on Mark Teixeira, because Teixeira last year was my Mr. Irrelevant. I picked him last in my home league with friends, and I thought I got a steal. And once again, he just could not stay healthy. So hopefully Teixeira can stay healthy this year, because I think he still has power in that bat, even though his average has severely declined over the last couple of years. To their rivals, the Red Sox, it's really interesting what's going on in their outfield. So it looks like they want to force Hanley Ramirez into left field, which who knows how that's going to play out. But with him moving out there, we got Rizny Castillo, Mookie Betts, and Shane Victorino left to fill the other two outfielder spots, and they're saying Victorino is going to be a starter. Not to mention, he wants to go back to switch hitting, so the likelihood of a platoon lessens. You know, who's going to be the odd man out in the outfield there for the Red Sox?
I think right now it's going to be Betts. But as the season goes along, I think that Victorino is going to find himself on the outs. And it's not, they like Victorino, but he's clearly the oldest of the bunch. He's going to be a free agent next winter. So there's a chance they trade him. And of course we know he can't stay healthy the last few years. Saying that he'll play a full season would be very, very lucky for him. So I think that the ideal outfield for the Red Sox would be with Castillo and Hanley Ramirez and Mookie Betts. Of course, there's always a chance that one of these players gets traded. They've been talking about acquiring Cole Hamels all offseason. And to get Cole Hamels, they may have to dangle a Mookie Betts in a trade like that. So that could change things. But right now, unfortunately, Betts looks like, from John Farrell's comments, that he's going to start the year on the bench. But that doesn't mean he's not going to play. And he's a better player, I think, than Victorino will be. But for now, he looks to be on the outs, which in drafts so far, it's really hurting his ADP, which is great because you can get a guy with a talent like that in the later rounds. He's really dropped a lot, and I think he's a guy that's definitely someone you should target if you're looking for a sleeper later on.
Yeah, in our writer's draft, let's see, Betts went in the sixth round to Brian, just ahead of you, actually. So I'm wondering how he's feeling about that pick now. That's why in a lot of my money leagues, I prefer to draft like the Wednesday or Thursday before the season begins, just to have the most up-to-date info. Obviously, with spring training, you're going to see a lot of injuries, and it really helps if you're going to be drafting this spring to wait until the last possible moment so that you don't have to pay up for a guy just based on upside.
Yeah, I think there's advantages to both. I like drafting some leagues early, and I like drafting some leagues later on as well because, like you said, it's nice to see all the injuries, all the depth charts, who's made the squad, and that you get that when you draft later. But drafting early, I think you sometimes, if you do your research, you have an advantage over other drafters because you know which prospects are coming up. You can speculate the depth charts. You can speculate who's going to have a big season. And when you wait till the end, all the, you know, sleepers, everyone knows who they are at that point because there's been a million articles written about them. So I think there can be an advantage of drafting early if there's some players that you think other guys aren't looking at.
Yeah, I think another one of my favorite bits about waiting is everybody gets so overly hyped about spring training. I think if a guy is hitting 450 in spring training, he's primed for a breakout season. And if he's been a 240 career hitter, suddenly he's only hitting 240 in season, but everybody's paying up for him because he had a big spring training. So I like to take their career stats into account a lot more than I will whatever spring training numbers they put up this year.
Agree.
All right, so let's go to another crowded outfield situation. We have four outfielders for the Dodgers this year. Carl Crawford in left, when healthy, obviously. Jock Peterson in center, Yasiel Puig in right. And the $18 million man, Andre Ethier, apparently does not have a starting spot once again. And this is a team that traded away Matt Kemp, or signed him away, I don't remember which it was, but I thought that they were going to open up a spot for Peterson in center. That appears to be happening. What are they going to do with Ethier? I mean, they got a lot of money owed to this guy. I don't think they can deal him at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. He's owed around $56 million, which is just mind-boggling. I think they're just going to have to trade him, really, because you can't keep Peterson's potential out of that lineup. He's the next wave of young players for them, including Corey Seager and players like that. So they need him there, whether he's good or not this year, Peterson. They need him in the lineup. They didn't get rid of Kemp to have Ethier play out there, or for Ethier to even be paid that kind of money coming off the bench. He doesn't hit left-handed hit batters, pitchers, so he's already limited. It's not like you can just pinch hit him versus anybody. I think in order to make a trade, they're going to have to eat a lot of that contract, but we've seen the Dodgers have literally no care about the money that they spend. I think when it comes down to it, you're going to see them trading Ethier to a team and probably eating 80% of that contract and just washing their hands clean of that situation.
Yeah, it could end up a very nice deal for whoever does trade him. I mean, he's a solid hitter. He doesn't have the power that I think the Dodgers were expecting when they signed him to that long-term deal. And suddenly they ended up with Puig and Peterson coming up through the system. And I don't know. I think if Crawford gets hurt, as you know he's wont to do, Ethier could find a spot in that outfield. But that's a lot to gamble on from the Dodgers' perspective. I think they might be better served to just eat some of the money and cut ties now. Michael Saunders for the Blue Jays, you know, this is a guy, 2020, but he's now expected to miss 5 to 6 weeks. Who are you going to be looking at if Saunders' injury timetable gets pushed back, let's say, to 2 or 3 months?
Unfortunately, there really isn't a great fantasy player that will benefit from his absence. I actually liked Saunders a lot going through the season, and it looks like now that the original prognosis of the All-Star break has been reduced to 5 to 6 weeks. They decided to just remove 70% of the meniscus. So a little bit quicker timetable, though that could change a little bit. But in the meantime, you got guys like Kevin Pillar, Andy Dierks, Chris Dickerson, Danny Valencia. Out of those, I would say Valencia has at least the most pop there. And we've seen he can hit home runs in the past with Baltimore. With Minnesota, but there's no one I'm really grabbing there. It's not like a situation where this guy, where any of these players are going to come in and completely usurp all the stats that Saunders would have had. I do like Dalton Pompey, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but he was supposed to be the starting center fielder, young guy, a lot of speed, and I just think that solidifies his role as a starting fielder now, where he may have platooned a little bit, sat out a little bit because they're trying to get other bats in the lineup. But he's solid now, and I think I'd move him up my draft boards if you're looking for steals and a guy that's going to bat near the top of the lineup.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be drafting any of those replacement guys, but just given what's happened in the last couple of years in Toronto, I don't know what form of Canadian steroids they're giving their guys. I'm going to be keeping an eye on that situation because if Valencia or Dierks, you know, gets that starting job and they start cranking out home runs, I'm going to swoop in because when Edwin Encarnacion went to the Blue Jays, he was not a huge power hitting threat. And suddenly this guy's hitting 40, 45 home runs a year to join Jose Bautista, who didn't do anything with the Pirates before coming over. So who knows? Maybe they have some secret sauce up there to keep an eye on.
It's a very nice stadium to hit home runs in as well. And one name we didn't mention, actually, is that they've been discussing is Dayan Viciado, who's a free agent right now. He was released by the White Sox, and he's put up big power numbers with the White Sox, and the Blue Jays were mentioned as a team that now that they need an outfielder, although he's not great in the outfield, but now that they need an outfielder, he might be on their radar, and he would plug in very nicely in that stadium in that lineup if he were able to get some at-bats there.
Defensively, though, it could be a bit of a challenge playing on that AstroTurf for him. All right, so the last bit of news we have is K-Rod. Francisco Rodriguez has been brought back on a 2-year deal with Milwaukee Brewers. Where does he fall into your closer rankings now that he is officially signed?
I think he's going to be at the beginning of that third tier, beginning to middle of that third tier. He had a big drop off in the second half last year, as expected, and it was really his first time as a full-time closer in quite a while. We forget how long he's been around. I went to some Angel games, and you're an Angels fan, and I went to some games back when they went to the World Series. In the early 2000s, and that was when he was first coming up, and it's crazy to think he's still only 33. But the fact that he was not signed for this long and it wasn't going to cost a draft pick says something a little bit about his expectations. He started off the season with a lot of saves, and that Brewers team in general was just on fire, and we know what happened to them. And he's not a top closer, but you had a chance if you were doing early drafts to grab him when he was not signed. I think that ADP is going to go up a little bit. If you're waiting on closers, yeah, sure, he's a good guy to grab at the end, and he'll get saves. But there is Jonathan Broxton there lurking, and he had a very good season last year. I wouldn't take him as your first closer, put it that way. I think he's a good punt later on, or as a third, fourth closer if you're looking just for a starting closer at the end of your draft.
I agree with most of those points. For those of us who are Angels fans that grew up, you know, I watched Wally Joyner, Chili Davis, Brian Downing, all these guys in the late 80s. That 2001 season was pretty magical. I mean, it was the year of the Rally Monkey and K-Rod, pretty much. I think a lot of people forget that Troy Percival was still closing at that time. K-Rod was just this young kid coming up with a crazy delivery, and nobody could hit him. And I think over the years, they've obviously adjusted to his mechanics, and hitters can see the ball a lot better now. He still strikes out right around a batter per inning, so that's solid for a closer. His ERA is a little bit higher than you'd want for a top-tier closer like Craig Kimbrell or Greg Holland, who are going to bring in an ERA around 1.5. K-Rod will probably hover around 3. I have him just inside the top 15 closers this year. I agree with that tier 3 assessment. I'm putting him behind guys like Trevor Rosenthal, Mark Melancon, Koji Uehara. Overall, I'd say him and Steve Cishek are pretty comparable. They're both pitching for teams that could win some games, not exactly the best teams in the league. So I think he's a guy that if you're getting him right now, you're probably going to get a better deal than you will going forward, just because people are obviously going to be on to him as the closer now. And he actually had a pretty solid first half last year. So people who played last year might be paying up for what he did in 2014. All right, looking at the clock, we have about 9 minutes left here. I wanted to cover a couple under-the-radar pitchers, guys who, for whatever reason, their ADP is lower than we would expect. Let's start with Adam Wainwright. Right now he's the 12th pitcher going off the board. What do you have on him?
I think it's a little bit early. I'm not extremely high on him right now. But there is some value with this new injury that's cropped up, and I think that he's not going to be what he used to be. But his numbers from last year were a bit overblown. I think that people got so in this hype that he had a bad season when it was really just 1 month. He had a bad July, and I think it's worth grabbing him for value because he was great down the stretch. I think there's going to be some regression, but on that team, he has a chance to win a lot of games if you're in a league that counts wins.
Yeah, it's funny that last year he posted an ERA of 2.38 and a WHIP of 1.03, and people are calling it a down year. His K per 9 is usually around 8.1. Last year it was 7.1, so maybe that has people a little bit scared that that's regressing. He's been in the league 10 years, so maybe the arm isn't going to hold up. But right now, he's just dealing with an abdominal strain. He should be thrown within 3 weeks. I think that injury could actually scare a lot of people off him. We could see him dropping out of the top 20 pitchers in ADP. I'm not going to be taking him at the end of the fifth round where he's going right now, but if he falls to the seventh or eighth rounds, I think it's an excellent deal.
Yeah, in our draft, I believe I got him in the seventh round, and at that point, I'm willing to take a chance. If you look at the numbers, obviously he was outstanding in the first half, just lights out. But then he had, I'm sorry, it was not July, it was August, where he posted a 5.17 ERA. People got scared off. He was just completely hittable, 282 average against. But then he came back in September and went back down to a 1.38 ERA. Only gave up 6 earned runs in 30 innings. Only had 5 walks in those 39 innings. Only 5 walks in those 39 innings. So he was back to his old self. Yes, the 220 strikeout days are probably behind him, but he's going to be another player like Mookie Betts, who's getting negative spring training commentary around him, and that's only going to help his value help his value if you can get him later in the draft.
I think a lot of the more casual players will certainly be listening and say, oh, Wainwright's injured and, you know, drop him mentally in their rankings. Let's go to a guy who's coming back from injury, Matt Harvey. He's coming back from Tommy John. He's going to be 16 months removed from Tommy John, which is plenty of time for him to be fully healthy. He's going as the 36th pitcher off the board. This guy had 191 strikeouts across 178 innings in 2013. His ERA was 2.27 and a .93 whip. Why is this guy a 36th pitcher right now?
I don't know. I think it's the hype. I mean, had he not had Tommy John, I think he'd be even higher. But for me, I know it's been a while. It's not like he's Jose Fernandez who had the surgery last year. He had this at the end of the 2013 season, and they've been obviously very cautious with him and waiting this long. But you know, just for me, I let someone else take him. There's so many pitchers in the draft this year. It's just really, you can draft pitchers into the 25th round that are number three starters on their teams, and I'm staying away from Harvey. Just I'll look at him next year. I just let someone else have him. If he's great, I would love to see him pitch well. He was so fun to watch before, but I'll let someone else deal with that headache if there needs to be one.
I think he's a terrific value right now. He's going in the 12th round. This guy could end up with top 10, top 15 numbers, just given how he was pitching in 2013. I think the main thing to be scared of is an innings limit. If they pull a Steven Strasburg here and limit his innings, nobody's really expecting the Mets to be a competitor this year. So if they're in fourth place heading into July or August, I'd be looking to deal him and see what you can get.
Harvey, he's not a 12th round pick right now. He's a late fourth round pick. I have right now I have him as the 68th player off the board on Fantasy Pros right now, which uses ESPN and CBS and Yahoo and NFBC as their sites. So yeah, he's
okay. Yeah,
he's
so I was looking at the wrong ADP information
and,
then.
He might be the 12th pitcher off the board, not the 12th round. That might be closer.
Okay.
He's right. Yeah, he's around like the 17th pitcher off the board, so maybe that's what.
Yeah, I should have been using Fantasy Pros. I went to Mock Draft Central because that's where a lot of people are running their mock drafts this year.
One quick note while we're talking to pitchers, it's a little off topic, but they just announced that Chris Sale has an avulsion fracture in his foot. And that's bad news. So move all the other pitchers up your draft boards because he's going to be out for a while.
Wow. Yeah, that's big news because I got Chris Sale as the number two pitcher off the board right now. Wow. That is going to hurt him and it's going to hurt the White Sox.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so the last guy I wanted to talk about real quick was Jake Odorizzi. We got about a minute and a half left here. He's just going to be 25 this year. He managed a K per 9 of 9.32 last season. His ERA was a bit high at 4.18. But if he can get his walks per 9 down from the 3.16 to around 2.5, I really think this could be a breakout season for the Rays pitcher. What do you think?
As the Rays' best pitcher, or?
I mean, as a fantasy prospect, basically.
For,
this is a guy
value.
That you can get a little bit later in the draft. Yeah, I think he represents excellent value just with that K per 9.
Yeah, I agree. The strikeouts are really, really nice, and where his ADP is, getting a possible 175, 180, even 200 if he gets the inning strikeouts, that way in a draft is huge. There's a lot of value in Rays pitchers this year. Drew Smyly is another guy. Chris Archer. I mean, they've sort of retooled their team. Their offense isn't going to be amazing, but we look at this team and it's sort of similar every year that they get these great pitchers that they drafted or they trade for and they just become awesome. And they're going to get Matt Moore back midseason, though. Another Tommy John dies, so it's no guarantee. But they've got a pretty stacked pitching staff, and of course Alex Cobb. And so I agree. I think Odorizzi is a fine value where he's going right now, and is definitely worth a pick to see if he can turn around that ERA a little bit.
All right, well, that's all the time for us this week. Thanks for joining me, Seth, and good luck this season.
Thank you.